Hey everybody, how are you guys doing? I'm Colleen Fabry and this is Venture Europe. Venture Europe is a series of conversations with successful entrepreneurs, investors, and ecosystem contributors where we discuss about the strategies, tactics, frameworks, and failings that they have used and experienced during their journey. It is my personal vendetta to contribute in making Europe one of the most attractive entrepreneurial ecosystems in the world. Big words, hard work, so let's get started. Oh man, what an episode we have for you today. I had so much fun talking with Michel Traoré, the co-founder and CEO of Anotherblock, a Web3 platform democratizing music ownership through NFTs. Anotherblock connects music rights to NFTs and creates a smooth and easy way to both buy and sell music rights. Together with his co-founders, Michel plans to introduce music to a free and open market, increasing its value and solving the imbalance of power within the industry. Prior to Anotherblock, he spent several years at Schibsted and in the European startup scene building fintech products from scratch. Growing up between the pop wonder of Sweden and Burkina Faso, where his father created its first modern label, music has been a big part of his life. In 2021, Michel combined his fintech expertise and love of music to found Anotherblock. During this episode, we discuss about Web3, NFTs, how they are fractionalizing music, and how the holders will earn royalties. Also, we discuss about their latest drop coming October 20 for the song Alone Part 2 by Alan Walker and Eva Max. Song that has 400 million streams only on Spotify today. Without further ado, please enjoy this wonderful conversation with Michel Traoré, co-founder and CEO of Anotherblock. Thank you very much for taking the time, Michel.
Thank you so much for having me.
Very much appreciated. Where are you based?
So, based in Stockholm, more specifically right now, we're in Södermalm. I would call it like a little bit like the more creative part of the inner city, a little bit more, you know, culture here. We had a lot of like internal battles of where to have our office. In the end, I won. And I think that right now we recruited people who agree. So I'm really satisfied. Yeah, it's a nice place. And it's always like an apartment, this office. It's really cozy. And yeah, it's nice.
Love it. Actually, I also moved to Stockholm last October and I asked some friends around, hey, like which neighborhood should I move in? And they were like, well, like, it depends, you know, what's your style,
exactly.
What's your personality?
Yeah.
Like, do you want to go to Vasastan, a lot of restaurants, maybe a little bit, I don't know, like chic or how would you call it? And then you have Östermalm, maybe a bit fancy. And if you have family, and then Södermalm, definitely more hip.
Exactly. So what did you go with?
I went for Vasastan, to be honest.
Yeah.
I have mixed feelings, but indeed, like they have good restaurants around here, but quite often I go out actually in Södermalm.
Yeah, no, it's nice. It's nice. I live around here as well. So for me, it's a simple choice, but I've been moving around a lot in Stockholm. So yeah, there's good things about all the different parts, I'd say.
So did you also live in Vasastan and also Östermalm? And how come you decided Södermalm?
I did, not Östermalm. I lived in Vasastan. I lived outside of the city as well. A bunch of places.
Because if I remember correctly, like from your intro, you kind of grew up between two countries as well, no?
Exactly. So I didn't grow. I'm not from Stockholm originally. I come from the south of Sweden, Öland, and I moved essentially back and forth between Öland and Burkina Faso in West Africa, where my dad comes from originally. So yeah, we spent 2 years here, 2 years there, a lot of the time. So yeah, I didn't end up in Stockholm until I was around 19, and since then I've had it as a base. So when I've lived abroad, I've always come back to Stockholm afterwards.
Awesome. I'm always fascinated. Maybe I have a bias because also I kind of grew up in kind of multiple places. But I'm fascinated by the point of view that people that grew up in multiple places have, right? Because you would always have two or three perspectives. And also, like, one thing that I've noticed is that people that grow up in multiple places, one, they're more tolerant, but second, they're also maybe a little bit more of a like hustlers. Would you agree with that observation? How did that affect you personally?
I think that like it forces you to do certain things. Like it forces you to, because what happens when you grow up and you move back and forth is that you constantly need to build new friendship groups, I guess. You need to find your place. Like if you're in one place all the time, once you have your friend group, you can be quite comfy all the time. So I would say that it kind of forces you to perhaps, it's a hard school for, you know, to be socially skilled and to make sure that you will get friends in the new place you end up in. So yeah, I would say maybe that's a part of hustling, you know, to be able to read social cues and to try to fit in as good as possible in different places. Perhaps, yeah.
Interesting. And let's talk about Web3, right? You have a company that is kind of operating in Web3. So what is Web3 and how did we get here?
Like, to be honest, I don't even know what Web3 is. Like if you Google it or if you talk to people, some people think more of Web3 as, you know, AI and, you know, serendipity and the next level of brainy computers. The definition and the world I'm in, I would say that it is, you know, it's more about decentralization and transparency. So I think one definition that I often use that I think is maybe not fully correct, but I think it's a, you know, good guideline for like the development. If you want to use more of my definition, then I would go with, you know, Web 1 was read only, you know, you could spread information really widely. Web 2, you know, was read and write, meaning that you could contribute, you can interact, you know, YouTube, social media and all of that. And Web 3 is, you know, read, write, and own. So that means that, you know, you have all of these interactive things, but in this case, you know, the servers aren't run by one company. They're decentralized. You own your information. Transactions can be done trustlessly. You don't need middlemen. That's a little bit more of the Web3 I'm coming from or think about.
Right. So like read, write, and also now you can own. And where do the NFTs fit into this picture? You hear about NFTs everywhere nowadays.
Yeah. So I would say it was probably last year that NFTs really blew up. But yeah, NFTs is just, so you have these, you know, the first thing that came out on blockchain was Bitcoin. And that's just it's a fungible token, something that can be traded. One Bitcoin is worth exactly as much as another Bitcoin. An NFT is just, it's a token that lives on the blockchain, but it's non-fungible. So, you know, my token is different from yours. So that's how I see NFTs. It's just a technical protocol. And then we've had some, you know, branding difficulties with the word NFTs because of the different applications. But from my perspective, it's just a technical terminology that opens up a lot of possibilities.
Got it. So it's like a protocol you mentioned.
Yes, I would say. It's a token that's different from another token that you can own and in its entirety, and it can be fully yours.
Got it. And what do people often get wrong about NFTs?
Yeah, I would say, I mean, they're not necessarily wrong, but I would say something you often hear is that it's, you know, a pyramid scheme, or, you know, everybody's looking for the greater fool that's going to buy the NFT from you at some point. You know, there's no inherent value in it. And to be honest, that's a little bit how I looked at NFTs at first. So, you know, it took a while for me to get into NFTs as well. I think that one angle that's often missed in those, because these are the type of PFP projects that we like to call them. And the PFP projects are profile picture projects. So that's like a Bored Ape or a CryptoPunk. But, you know, what you're often missing then is that what you're buying is access to a community and something intangible. And that's kind of hard to explain unless you've been a part of an NFT community. But I would also say, like, it is a bit misunderstood because NFTs can do a lot more. And I mean, there's so many new projects coming out now, including ours, that really try to give the NFT an instinctive value that is not only based on building it up with something and then selling it on. It's actually something that's worth holding and owning. So yeah, I would say that the biggest misconception is that it's only schemes that's made to, you know, earn money quickly and be dumped. It's a lot more than that. It's a technology that can be used to solve a lot of problems and do great things.
So in the preparation for this episode, I kind of did a little bit of research, and indeed you kind of see NFTs being used in the gaming industry, in the film industry. You're doing it in the music industry, but also if it was used a lot in speculation, it kind of reminds me a little bit of the 2000 era when if you would have a website, right? So probably like in the Web 1, if you had a, or Web 2, if you had a website, if you had .com, you know, you would just go and try to raise millions. And that was kind of a bubble because it was based on this new trend in technology. And also now, like with NFTs, indeed, also you see a lot of speculations happening, but also at the same time, there are just a lot of very interesting projects, and the mechanism of NFT then kind of captures much more value. One company that also comes to mind is Sorare, right? And how did you get interested in the topic, like in Web3 on NFTs?
Yeah, I mean, I would say it was maybe like 2015 or something. I had a colleague and friend, Frederick, who started Dune Analytics later. He was going on and on about crypto in different ways. And I got interested. I bought my coins, traded a little bit, but it kind of ended there. And during the NFT hype last year, I actually took my time to do some research and understand like how it actually works, the NFTs. But I never actually got involved in any NFT projects. And that's because I just didn't find like, I just found it so difficult to value them. So was it a good time to buy a certain NFT that's expensive or cheap? Like I couldn't even figure it out. So I never even got into it. So yeah, for me, it was more like I was into trading coins a little bit, you know, privately. I knew about how NFTs worked on a high level. I wasn't active in the NFT community, but I had it in the back of my mind as a great technology. And yeah, when we started Another Block, for me, it just made total sense to use NFTs to solve the problem.
Do you remember the day when you decided actually to quit your comfy job at Shipstead and start Another Block?
Yeah, I don't think it was a day. I think it was a process. I just felt that there were, because you know, I'm a person who I often have tons of startup ideas simultaneously running through my head, you know, but I just felt that there was so much in this I really liked, because I am a big music lover. I play music. I listen to a lot of music. I see that there's a clear problem here that hasn't been solved. I like, you know, I really wanted to be a part of the Web3 wave and this wave of startups. And to me, I felt that this application of NFTs is actually, you know, it's clear that we came from a problem and we saw NFTs as a solution more than, you know, viewing NFTs or Web3 as a space we want to be in and trying to find a problem to solve. So yeah, I think that, you know, when all of those things came together for me, it just made complete sense for me to quit the comfy job and to try something.
So maybe it makes sense actually to deep dive now into the problem and the solution that Another Block is providing.
Yeah, 100%. So, I mean, the problem right now, I would say, in the music industry is that everybody's going on and on about Spotify not paying out enough and all of that. But the fact of the matter is that even though you get $4,000 for a million streams, like Spotify are paying out a lot of money to the recording industry. But that isn't divvied up in a proper way today. It's the ones sitting with the rights who end up getting paid. So to me, the more low-hanging fruit, I would maybe not low-hanging fruit, but the simplest solution, which is quite difficult to implement, would be to have a more fair ownership structure of who has the rights. And we believe that if we create an open market for music rights, then it's going to have several effects. The first effect is that normal people like me and you who like music can invest and make a profit and be owners of great music. But that will also allow future artists or established artists to go directly to us and sell a few of their points to fund new projects. And that will make sure that they end up with a larger part of the ownership than they would have if we were a label. And also, like in general, an open market will increase the value of music rights. And also, like what I would want to say, like if you have an open market and you see what a music rights are worth, then future artists are going to be less inclined to go with an 80-20 split with a label in the future. So I really feel that the problem in the industry today is very tied to who owns the rights. And our solution will, in the long run, change who owns the rights.
Right. And also, like, if you look at a music right, it's not very straightforward. I was just kind of researching a little bit because you have on one hand the rights of the songwriter, right? And then on the other hand, the rights of the record label. And then the way that they make money is by licensing either to streaming or public performance or B2B licensing. So when you actually fractionalize a song and when you create this music rights, like what type of rights are there? Are there like songwriter rights or like record label rights?
So what we're focusing on is what you call the record label rights. It's the master rights. So when a song is created, the most simple way to think about it is that if we have a song together, it's the simple way to think about it is that you have created the song, like the notes, the text, and I have done the recording of that song. So as the music world works today, when that is streamed on Spotify, me, who has done the recording, will get 80%, and you, who has done, you know, the songwriting and maybe parts of the production, will get 20% of the cash flow. What we're focusing on at Another Block now initially is those 80%. So we're focusing on the master rights side. And what we do is, instead of working with licensing, we want people to be able to own lifetime royalties on the part of the song that they own. So we work with producers, songwriters, artists. We could even work with labels who want to share ownership with the public. And then we make sure that your fractionalized ownership is actually a part of the future royalties from that master side right for life, or for as long as the copyright is protected. And that's normally 70 years post-mortem of an artist.
Super interesting. So let's discuss maybe like around an example, right? Maybe we can take the example of the 400 NFTs that represent the ownership in the Weeknd anthem Acquainted that you guys recently dropped.
Mm-hmm. 100%. So it's really, really simple. So what we do is first we have our mint, and the minting process is that you go to a website at a certain time. Then we have 1 hour time frame where there's an invite only list who can mint. The people are on the allow list, and then there's a public sale. So in this case, we sold out within 4 minutes, so we didn't go to public sale. But what happens is that you mint your NFT, so you create the NFT as you mint it. And in that NFT, you receive first like the visual feeling of an NFT. So you get a cool artwork, you get a custom sound loop with it. You have real world legal documentation signed by Danny Boy Styles that shows that you are now the owner of certain amounts of royalties. So that's the part where we connect the real world and the NFT world. And then you get different like community benefits and everything. But then once you have that NFT, royalties will start coming to your NFT. So every 6 months, you're going to be paid royalties based on the streams of those 6 months. But we're looking into now more complicated, more advanced solutions to be able to pay out royalties in real time, which would make us the first company in the world to enable that.
Amazing.
Yeah. And the great thing about how this process works is that we try to price at mint, we try to price the NFT based on future cash flows from the asset. So we're pricing it at a level where you can expect the 5-15% return on the actual music asset. So we don't price in, you know, all the things we do in the community, the artwork, the custom sound loop, the privileges, which means that what we've seen is that our NFTs are valued higher on the secondary market than in the primary market. And that creates even more interest for people to want to be a part of the mint and the community.
Interesting. So you sold 400 NFTs in less than 4 minutes only on the allowed list. So that means that it sold like better than hot chocolate.
True. You got the word in there. Yeah. 100%. Yeah. It went really well. And I think that for us now, like it's a great, because this is our second drop. The first one also got sold out during the pre-sale. So I think that for us, it's great to prove that if you have a real world asset like music rights tied to an NFT, then you're not as vulnerable to the larger NFT macro market. Everybody knows that the levels of NFT trading, the levels of trading is down and all of that. But, you know, we really haven't seen that effect as of yet.
Interesting. I would just like to maybe go back on what you said, that every 6 months, the royalties get paid out based on the streaming. How does that work? Like, are you looking at streaming across different music platforms, let's say Spotify, and if 100 million listeners have listened to that song, then you own the NFT that has the rights for the record label, and then there is a percentage from that 80% that you mentioned?
Exactly. So as an NFT holder, you own the percentage of the master recording. So when it's streamed on any platform, it can be Spotify, Tencent, Deezer, whatever, any DSP, then whenever it's streamed, you will receive your share in payout.
Got it. And what is the vision here? Like, where do you see Another Block, let's say in 10 years?
Yeah, I would say like the vision has different stages to it. Like the first vision we have right now is to create an open market for music rights and to create a big community of music owners out there, and to deliver this new path to artists, to give them this opportunity, and to really help the whole music industry. Once we get there, there's so much more we can do. As we're building this, we're solving things that don't exist right now in the NFT or Web3 world. We definitely also see potential in using some of the things we build to support other projects that can be more of an infrastructure play in the whole area. Another block in itself will always be focused on music rights or music. And we're focusing now on the big songs, but we're also going to allow up-and-coming artists to benefit from the platform. But then we really want to help the wider ecosystem by offering them the solutions we built for us.
Got it. And tell me more about the next song you plan to fractionalize.
Yeah, the next song it's a really, really big song. It's Alan Walker and his hit song Alone Part 2 that he does together with Ava Max. I think it has about 400 million streams only on Spotify today. So yeah, we're going to do 500 NFTs. They're going to cost about $88. And then you buy them in ETH. So we set the ETH price the day of the mint. But yeah, it's going to be $88. And yeah, on average, you'll receive a return on about 7% per year just on the royalties. And then, of course, you know, all of the other things we do with the NFT and the community is something you get just on top of it.
That's amazing because so this is on a proven song.
Yes, yeah, super proven.
So the strategy here is like to go on a proven song and actually to open it up to retail investors that are big fans and actually they can own a part of a song that they really, really like, or
exactly,
to own a part of a song from an artist that they really, really like. And then I would imagine then also you get this community feeling much, much stronger when actually you can participate in the creation of one of your favorite artists.
Exactly. And I mean, this is the type of song, and even The Weeknd Acquainted is the type of song that normally big funds would buy, catalog holders or very rich individuals would buy the rights of, or record labels would have. And I would say this is the first time where you can actually be owning a part of a song like that. And that is the frontier we're trying to break down right now.
Amazing. Super excited for the road ahead. And also, I guess the listeners will probably be very interested to be on the loud list this time.
Yeah, I mean, it's great fun. And we have a quite vibrant community where, you know, we're mainly on Discord right now, where you can discuss music and NFTs and the whole space. There's a lot of excitement going around.
Right. So on Discord, anyone can join, or if you're actually...
Anyone can join. Then there are, you know, different privileges. Some channels and information you'll only get if you're a co-owner of music.
Got it. Super interesting. And let's get personal. This is actually my favorite part of the episode. What was the most challenging period in your career and how did you overcome it?
I would say maybe it's, a few years back. I was struggling with quite a lot of anxiety and just feeling completely exhausted from it. I'm not sure how I came over it. I'm quite an active person seeking solutions. I know I tried a lot of different things, but it's more like once you have gone through it, I think it adds a dimension to you as a person, and for better and for worse. But for the better, it definitely makes you more of a compassionate person, I would say. But yeah, no real tips on the exact steps of how to get out of those situations, more than knowing that you will get out of it eventually.
And how was the anxiety manifesting?
All types of ways. It can be physically, feelings of exhaustion, can be feelings of panic, and distress in general. Just general discomfort, I would say.
General discomfort. And for how long did you feel it?
Half a year. I would say. And it's not like flipping a switch. It comes and it goes. It's more of a scale where you move softly up and down from, or at least I did.
Were you aware back then, or only in hindsight you're like, oh?
No, definitely. I'm a very self-critical person. So I'm very aware of what's going on. And if something's not right, I definitely am aware of it.
Got it. Thank you for sharing that. And how is the entrepreneurial journey different than what you imagine it to be?
I think that it is quite similar to what I imagined it to be. I know that when I was working on, because I always have tons of ideas, as I mentioned, and I knew that I wanted to go one of two ways. Like, either I wanted to do something B2B, private business, retain ownership, go for, you know, good profitability, that kind of business, had a few of those in mind, like, or I wanted to do something on the complete different end of the scale, where it's overly ambitious, it's B2C, whether you win or lose, you will have had some sort of impact on the world. And yeah, I'm really happy I went with the latter, and it's just as I imagined it. Some people you meet early on, like, either they love it or they really think what you're doing is stupid or impossible. And it's very satisfying to proving people wrong. And it's also equally satisfying to proving to the people who believe in the model and you that things are working when they're working.
Yeah, I can attest. It's very satisfying to prove people wrong. Did you have any moment in this journey where you're like, yes, this is it. Shit, we're really onto something.
Yeah, I mean, we're still really, really early in what we're doing. But I would say, like, it was this summer when we started seeing a lot of people joining our Discord and our community. And by then we hadn't announced any music. We've only announced our vision and what we wanted to do and build. And to see people getting as excited by us, you know, here's the chance to own music, and they're trying to do it in this, you know, creative way, and seeing that people could get engaged already there. Then I felt that this is something that is, it's not just another startup. It's something that's really, really new. We're not just, how do you say, we're not just like copying someone, or we're not, you know, this is something that's groundbreaking and that will have an impact either way.
And what was the hardest part in getting some top songs on the platform, some top labels saying yes, top producers?
The problem is you always need to get the first one. Like, once you have the first one, and now the phones are ringing all the time. People want to be a part of it, and they want to be a part of it because we make them look super cool. We make sure it sells good. Like, the whole experience for them is really good. So now it's quite simple, but it's always difficult to get the first one in because you don't have any track record. And so I would say it's just, you know, spending a lot of time with them, really making them trust you as people, because, you know, you're never going to win any top creator with a pitch deck. They need to like you. Otherwise, there's nothing will happen.
Do you remember the moment when you closed the first big one and you're like, shit, yes?
Yes, I do. I think it was this Christmas when Steve Angelo decided to invest and be part of this. And we felt that if he can believe in this, who gets offers every day, then there's something special here.
Amazing. And what was your favorite artist growing up?
It's hard. Like, every phase you have different artists. I'm still growing up, so I would say that my favorite artist, like, the last couple of years is Kid Cudi, I would say.
Kid Cudi.
Yeah.
And could we use actually a song that you guys have fractionalized at the end of this episode?
Yeah, sure.
I thought it would be cool. So when also researching the topic, and also I thought about this problem before, that in B2B music, actually the lead time to agree on a song is kind of 6 to 12 months. Will actually the NFT give you also, like, let's say, rights to use parts of the song? Let's say 5 seconds, 10 seconds. Have you thought about that?
No, what you can use if you own the NFT is the sound loop, the 15 minutes custom sound loop that is in the NFT, because that one you have full rights to. And sometimes it's, you know, in this case, if it's the Weeknd song, it's Danny Boy Styles who created the song. He did a custom sound loop with the same inspiration. If it's Weeknd on a Tuesday that we did with Rehab and Laidback Luke, then it's actually sort of a part of the song. But what you own in the NFT is parts to owning and parts of the rights. You don't own a certain segment of it. So you still need to go the traditional ways to be able to play a full song. And I know there are startups working on this, how you should be able to license different songs. And that's something that's obviously further down on our roadmap, but it is way more complicated, because then you need to really deal with the rights holders, because it's more about where things can be used and not be used. So it's super simple if you work with independent artists that aren't signed anywhere and are completely free, or free agents. It is way more difficult. Like, if you want a Michael Jackson song, it's going to take time, unfortunately. And there's, in the current market or current rules that we play by, it won't change in a while.
Got it. And yeah, I know actually a Swedish company trying to solve this, like, fresh sound, no?
Yeah, I heard about them, yeah.
Yeah, and I was discussing with the guys and I was like, yeah, but looking at another block, couldn't you just have like this 10 to 15 seconds loop within an NFT that you have the rights? Wouldn't that be super cool?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, for us, it's just, we see that as a bonus. We see, you know, the main utility is owning a piece of the royalty of the main song. But then we just felt that people will want to be able to listen to something in the NFT as well. So that's why we added that. And we're going to be experimenting. You know, we might say that we do a Madonna song one day, then we might use a professional producer, a great songwriter, and create, you know, a version of that in the NFT while you own the real song, the rights of the real song in parallel.
Interesting. Which 10 seconds of which song should we put on at the end of this episode?
I really like the sound loop for the Acquainted one. It's a bit low key, but it's good. It's low key, but it's nice. It's the soft sound and you can loop it a few times.
Amazing.
You need to get one though. You need to go get one. On the secondary.
On the secondary. Do you have one? Maybe I can borrow yours.
Yes. Maybe. Let's talk about it.
Okay. We can make a deal. And the last question, if Michel from 10 years ago would listen to this episode, what would you tell him?
I think 10 years ago, I was actually working on a startup with my elder brother. And we were coming close to the end of that. And I was going back to doing my master's. So yeah, I would just say that you're going to be back on the entrepreneurial ride again.
Thank you very much, Michel, for taking the time. I had a lot of fun having this chat.
Yeah, it was great.